WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD, the flagship of all WATD radio stations, including 1460 AM WBMS and 1510 WMEX. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I am your host. I am your captain this evening. We have a great show lined up for you, starting out with the State House report. You know, that's a staple. That's how we begin the show. This week, we speak with State Representative Kathy Lenatra. We'll check in with the 12th Plymouth District State Representative. One of the things that caught my eye recently in the past couple of days was seeing a photo of the state rep volunteering at one of the vaccination sites. We'll talk with her about that. Maybe get a little checkup on maybe some committee assignments and what she's up to. That's all coming up in just a few moments. Followed by, we'll speak with WATD sports reporter Brendan Conley. As we have, this radio station has reported over the past few days, an incident regarding the Duxbury football team's coach and some of the calls that were on the football field leading to Dave Mamron being fired. We will, in a delicate way, talk about the situation with Brendan, get his understanding and what happens moving forward. Will Duxbury be able to finish out its season? How does this affect the other teams? We'll talk with Brendan about that. Our number two, start with Alex Bazanson. Alex is not only an elected official, he's a selectman in Abington, but he's also the chairman of the Plymouth County Democratic League. It's early, but there are municipal races that are heating up, that are taking place. We'll check in with Alex about those particular races, any races that he's aware of. We'll chat about that. And if folks are looking to get involved, we'll make sure we get his information out there. If you are a potential Democrat who's looking for assistance, even though municipal races are nonpartisan. We will finish out the radio program. We will speak with Paula Harris. Now, you may remember Paula. We actually had her on, and we're talking about your financial success and your preparedness when it comes to your finances. She is here to join us this evening to talk about a new book that she is involved with. She's one of 36 writers who participated in a new book called Life Lessons in Success. And we're going to talk to Paula about that book and the meaning behind it and some of the training she got that led up to this particular book. So we look forward to that in just a couple of moments. Time for us to find out one final time what's happening out on the roadways. Being brought to you by Brennan's Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshop.com, with locations at Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. The expressway northbound is crawling from Furnace Brook up to a crash over in the cutout at Granite Ave. Southbound's a 13-minute ride from the tunnel to the split. Routes 3 South and 24 South are both in good shape. and 93 is delay-free either way between Braintree and Canton. This report is sponsored by the Transportation Security Administration. $1,000 sign-on bonus, that's what the TSA is offering at Logan International. Apply online at tsa.gov/TSO. Some conditions apply. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DiMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeffrey from Brennan's. For once, I am at a loss for words. I'm just speechless. I mean, what can I say? I, like you, am a speck of dust on a rock floating literally in the middle of nowhere. It makes me wonder how people like Charlie Baker think they have the authority to tell this speck of dust how I should blow around on this rock. Newsflash, Baker and cronies, you're just a weenie speck like me and everyone else on this planet. I have only one authority, and last time I checked, the creator of the universe didn't work for the Commonwealth. In your failed attempt to control specks of dust, you cost the Commonwealth billions. I may be a fool, but I'm not foolish like you. Billions of dollars, dudes. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Hey, we are back for our very first segment of the evening. As you know, the first segment always reserved and called the State House Report, where we are privileged to be able to talk to state reps and state senators from across the South Shore. Occasionally we have folks from other parts of the Commonwealth, but you know, we kind of focus on the South Shore. Joining us, it's her turn up in the rotation, you know, State Representative Kathy Lenatra, representing the 12th Plymouth District. Do not dare ask me what the different towns or precincts she represents in her district, because I've joked with her that it's kind of vast. She goes, yeah, but I have, you know, a precinct here, and you know, she's like, I love all of my precincts and all of my towns, but I'm rambling on here. Representative, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Well, thanks for having me, Kevin. Yes, I feel that I have the most precincts on the South Shore.
Very interesting.
Represent the most districts.
As opposed to, and it's by no means his fault, but Matt Muratori, who represents the first Plymouth district, and it's basically Plymouth.
It's not even the full town of Plymouth. When Rep Muratori was a selectman, he represented the entire town. So I split Plymouth. I have three precincts in Plymouth, 1, 11, and 13. And then new representative, Steve Xaros, is down on the southern border there.
Excellent. I wasn't sure if you had your fact checker on, joining us this way. She's chiming in. It is a she, right? Or is it a he?
This one's a she, yes. Sorry.
Okay. It's all right. So if folks hear a little, that's the representative's puppy in the background joining us on the radio program. It's okay. We are friendly to all animals here on Monday Night Talk. You know, what sparked my interest in making sure I reached out to you is I saw a photo of you in the past few days at a, you were volunteering as part of a vaccination clinic. I was like, that's fantastic. I like seeing that, you know, our local representation getting involved and volunteering and being a part of the community. So I was like, Representative, would you join me? You're like, absolutely, no problem.
I was brought up volunteering and my children were brought up volunteering. So that's just second nature for my family. My husband's also a big volunteer, but this was important. So this is a vaccination clinic here in Kingston where I live. It's Skinnestein Med Spa. And Matt and Don Naylor are the owners there, and they have been doing yeoman's work. They gave up their Saturdays of business to be able to inoculate last week, and we did 600 vaccines. I didn't actually, you know, put the vaccine in someone's arm, but I was volunteered with the parking situation. They had, I think, at least 8 to 10 nurse practitioners or RNs that were administering the vaccine. People that couldn't get out of their cars, they would go right to their cars. It was so well run. And it was such a pleasant day to see people that really had a hard time getting the vaccine, and they were not able to go into Fenway or Gillette Stadium or the city. And here they were in their community and were able to stay in their car if they needed to, or were escorted into her office. It was a great day. We all worked really hard. We all had a fabulous day, and kudos to the Nailers for doing this. It's a true gift to the surrounding community to have this here locally.
I must say, since I've had a chance to witness the local vaccinations, whether it's Marshfield, and I was astounded to see their town administrator, Mike Maresco, out there, you know, guiding the traffic and all the firefighters and volunteers. I've seen Abington, I've seen Whitman and Brockton, and I feel that the local representation does an amazing job at, you know, running and organizing these events. This is what they're trained for and prepared for. Would you agree?
I agree. I'm not sure if you're aware, I'm sure you are. I had previously done a press conference with local fire chiefs. Representative Sullivan was there. Senator Brady was there. Just to voice our disappointment and our frustration that our Board of Health and our fire departments, who were well-equipped to handle their communities, who had a plan in place, they've trained for these things, who know their community, they know their older population, they know the people that are homebound, they know their vulnerable population, and weren't allowed, or were actually their vaccines were taken away from them, from some of them, and some they never received after they were promised. So it's been a very frustrating process. We did hear from a lot of constituents at the beginning, but I'm starting to feel that it's evening out and people are starting to get their vaccines, especially with the vaccines becoming more readily available and J&J on the market coming out to the public. I think, you know, we're starting to see a lot of people get their vaccines, and a lot of the frustration and the fear, quite honestly, the fear is starting to diminish, which is good to see.
It's interesting you mentioned those firefighters or those fire chiefs or fire officials. We did have a segment of Monday Night Talk where we featured the likes of Duxbury Fire Chief Kevin Nord, Whitman Fire Chief Tim Grano, Abington's Fire Chief, as well as Hanover's Fire Chief. Saying, as you said, you know, you said so eloquently, is that, you know, they had that press conference to say, hey, we are equipped, we're ready to do this. And if the state will let us do this, we will be a very willing partner. So it was good that you brought that up and you mentioned that.
Always support our local fire departments and our Board of Health. They've been working quite diligently and hard on this. We're still hoping that there will be a regional vaccination open at Kingston Collection. You know, that can's been kicked down the road for a long time. So hopefully that will actually materialize, so the general population will have a place locally to go.
So I mentioned when I was kind of giving a background on you being a volunteer for the vaccination clinic, I also saw something on social media that it was a joint message from yourself, from State Rep Josh Cutler, from Senator Patrick O'Connor. And that was the news last week that seemed to dominate our news cycle about the Duxbury football team and the plays, the call on the fields, the audibles that were made, yes, and how it was referring to the Jewish people, especially during the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. If you will very briefly touch upon it, as you're a part in that letter.
Very briefly, I did not find out about it till I was watching the news. I believe it was Sunday evening, and Rep Cutler called me the next morning. And along with Patrick O'Connor, we really felt that we needed to make a statement, a strong statement, I feel. Between the three of us, you know, we discussed it. And I myself have been to Auschwitz. And when I discussed that, I realized Rep. Cutler had been there as well. We were both the same age when we went, but one of us is older, I won't say who. So, and we still remember that feeling of being there, the coldness, and it comes back to me just speaking about it, the hair on my arms, the coldness that we felt. I was actually on a college tour called Club Europa, and most of the students on that tour were of the Jewish faith. And I grew up in Hanover, which probably very secluded, you know, very, didn't really, wasn't very worldly at that time. And it really hit deep to me. So it was a changing moment in my life. So, and when I discussed this with Rep Cutler, you know, the same for him. So we felt that we needed to come out with a statement on this.
I want to move on to, you had mentioned during our earlier conversation about the American Recovery Act and knowing that we are going to be receiving stimulus here. Give me your thoughts in regards to, I believe you are going to be on a special committee that is in regards to the monies that we're going to receive from this act.
Yes, it's a new committee that was formed at the State House. Dan Hunt, Rep. Dan Hunt is the chair. We have a meeting Tuesday, tomorrow night, with someone from the White House that is going to really get down in the weeds with the American Recovery Act for us. So we'll really be able to understand it and discuss it with our municipalities and our town managers. But the numbers that I've seen so far, there's a lot of money coming into the municipalities and the towns, which will be so helpful, especially as we have town meeting time, we have budget time, and this will ease the pain for those towns. So I'll be more apt to discuss that and really explain it after tomorrow night.
And we are speaking with State Representative Kathy Lenatra. She is my guest for this first segment of Monday Night Talk. Interesting enough, and I use it as a segue, it's great to see that we're getting this money that's going to be coming in courtesy of the law that was, the bill that was signed into law by Congress, by President Biden, and that you have a chance to be on this committee. But you're also on, I didn't realize it, on the Joint Committee for the Ways and Means. How exciting is that?
Very exciting. Very exciting. That was my goal. It's been wonderful. I've learned so much. We have had hearings twice a week so far. This week we'll have a few more. We're working on the budget. I'm really learning the budget process in the state. Just working with Chair Michael Witz has been amazing. So that's very exciting. The committees that I received this term have been wonderful. You know, I couldn't ask for anything more. It'll be a great learning session for me as well. And I'll have a voice, which is very important for the people down here in the 12th Plymouth, who sometimes we feel are forgotten to the big cities. So to bring the bacon home is very important to me.
Yeah. I mean, what have the meetings been like for the Ways and Means? Are they mostly Zoom, or is there going to be a component where you're going to have to, where the group's going to have to travel around the Commonwealth?
I was looking forward to traveling around the Commonwealth, and that has not happened as of yet. We've all been on Zooms. We're still on Zooms. Sessions are by phone. I did go in the last session into the State House because I've missed it, quite honestly, and we had a very important bill that was being passed, and I wanted to be there for that. So that was great to be in and actually see my office, which I really like my office at the State House. But it has been remote as of late, and hopefully with everybody's vaccine, that will start to change because we have a lot of new colleagues that I've yet to meet face to face.
What would you say, what's the key conversations that are being had on the Ways and Means these days? What are you taking away from the handful of meetings that you've attended for this group?
So we've talked about housing. We've talked, there's so many meetings. All right, so we've had housing. We have public safety. Friday would be public safety. So we've talked to, you know, all the stakeholders, Secretary Keneally, economic development. We've had hearings on that. They're long hearings. You take lots of notes and you still get written. Their written testimony is sent to you so you can read, look at that and relearn what they said. And we take all that into account when we go into the budget. What's going to be very helpful are their funds for the American Recovery Act to everything. So that will be taken into account after tomorrow night, Tuesday. And then we work on that. And then, of course, we have all the requests from our communities, too, the things that happen in the municipalities that they need funding for.
Now, the funding from the American Recovery Act, what's your understanding as to, how immediately we're going to realize these funds. I mean, is this an immediate thing?
I believe it's sooner than later. I'll know more tomorrow night. And I don't know, as most people know here in Plymouth County, the Plymouth County Treasurer handled those funds from the CARES Act. So I'm not sure if he'll be handling the American Recovery funds, which would be very beneficial to us here in Plymouth County. So we will wait and see what happens there.
Okay. I want to congratulate you. I didn't realize that you got a chairmanship, or you're a vice chair.
Vice chair, committee.
Of export development. What is that?
Export development, very important. It goes hand in hand with economic development, which is another committee that I sit on. Export development is really promoting our goods and services here in Massachusetts, not only nationally, but internationally. I'd like to focus on the cranberry industry. We all know we're in cranberry country here, and our cranberry farmers are hurting. I'd like to really have a deep dive into cranberries and have some hearings down here on the South Shore. Also the oysters, our oyster farmers, really promoting our oyster industry. They've been hit hard with some new rules and regulations in the Plymouth Bay area, so they could use some assistance as well. So it's exciting to dig deep into those industries and promote them not only nationally, but internationally.
What's interesting, you mentioned cranberries. I believe that Massachusetts is number two in the country when it comes to growing it. Not many people know who the number one state is in the nation. Would you know?
I know that where it is. Oh, just give me the first letter because I do know this.
Okay, it's a W, and it's in the center of the...
So we used to be number one.
We used to be. So
we used to be number one.
Wisconsin is
Wisconsin. Oh, now I'm stumbling here.
It's okay. But no, not many people know that. They kind of assume that you drive everywhere and there are cranberry bogs. But no, we're number two in the nation.
And we think, you know, Ocean Spray. Right. So we always think, you know, that it is here, but that has changed. And we've discussed that. I've been to some cranberry grower meetings, and that's discussed. So there's a lot, you know, there's a lot that can be done with cranberries.
Indeed. Well, as we wrap up the segment, anything we haven't had a chance to chat about, but you want to touch upon for your constituents, for the listeners?
Well, I hope that my constituents know that they can always reach out to my office for anything they need. I know unemployment is still an issue for many, and there's the big backup at the unemployment office, and people have been waiting. And I would like them to know that they could reach out to my office for assistance at any time, and we'd be happy to help. So my email, which I hope everybody knows, is Kathleen.Lanatra, my last name, L-A-N-A-T-R-A, at mahouse.gov. I have a wonderful legislative director. His name is Christopher Jean. He's extremely helpful. His email would be very similar. It would just be Christopher.Jean at mahouse.gov. We will be happy to get right back to you. And I know that there's, you know, we file over 6,000 bills each season, and there's been many bills that have been filed this session, and I cannot be aware of all of them. If there's one that is very important to you that you don't think that I'm aware of, or you want to make me aware, or you want to share your passion for that bill, please reach out to me. I love to hear from my constituents. And quite honestly, there's been a few that have come up that I had no idea, and they were wonderful bills, and I was happy to co-sponsor them.
Well, we want to thank you very much for joining us and always being a part of the rotation and talking about some of the things that are going on and some of the things that are pertinent. Like I said, I feel that we're fortunate to have had you join us at the right time, talking about COVID, talking about not only your efforts to volunteer, but the monies that we're going to be seeing. I mean, you know, the American Recovery Act is something that the country is going to enjoy, but, you know, special to us here, knowing that we faced tough times over the past 12 months is good to have you on to talk about that.
It's a, you know, I do see we're going to get on the other side of this. I do see a light at the end of the tunnel. I don't think that it's going to be sooner than later. I'm hoping by the fall. I'm hoping our children will all be back in the fall and be able to play with their friends and do those social things that they need to do and see their grandparents. And but we're going to get to the other side of this.
Well, if President Biden has his way, we'll all be having burgers and hanging out at cookouts by July 4th. That's the that's the plan in his book. So let's see if that comes to fruition. But I think
let's
you're right.
See. That's an optimistic plan, and I'd like to go with that plan as well.
Here she is, State Representative Kathy Lenatra, joining us here on Monday Night Talk. We're going to step aside, and we come back, more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
Dad, you think UFOs will ever come?
Well, I'm not sure they've ever been invited.
Can we invite them?
Yeah, but how?
Well, we've got a flat roof and Christmas light strings. We can spell out UFOs land here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll hold the ladder for you.
Later that night, there arose such a clatter.
Dad, look out on the lawn! A UFO with a broken windshield!
Wow, better call Tiny and Sons. They'll replace that windshield and insurance pays.
Do space aliens have insurance?
Oh, they wouldn't leave home without it.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. Our service is out of this world. Just call 1-888-64-TINYS. And thank you.
As a dentist, I know what my patients are saying during times when they really can't speak.
Mm-hmm.
She says her gums are irritated.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you can do? Absolutely. You can try New Crest Advanced Gum Restore.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, New Crest Advanced Gum Restore. It detoxifies below the gum line to restore your gums back to health in just 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Healthy gums, healthy mouth.
New Crest Advanced Gum Restore. Healthy, beautiful smiles for life.
Guys, confidence can go a long way. And confidence in the bedroom can make it your favorite room in the house. Blue Chew's chewable tablets can help. You get the same active ingredients as in Viagra and Cialis, but at a fraction of the cost. Prescriptions are filled online with no trips to the doctor or pharmacy. Visit BlueChew.com for details and safety information. Use the promo code BETTER and receive the first month of your active plan free. That's BlueChew.com. Promo code BETTER.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk.
Hey, we are back here on Monday Night Talk, heard at 959WATD. And just a reminder, if you've missed any of our shows, especially in 2021, those are now available on the podcast site. Just go to the WATD homepage, the website, and you can search for our web, our podcast. Joining us today is WATD sports reporter Brendan Conley, although I'm not sure if he's just a reporter with all that he does. Brendan, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Kevin. I consider myself a reporter, but what was the other thing you had in mind?
Except maybe you might be like the sports director or something. I mean, you've got a long tenure at the radio station, so I thought you would have ascended to that role by now.
You would think so. It's a mixed bag. Everyone kind of does their own thing. In a way, you could say kind of I am, but I think it's more of a team effort.
Well, Brendan, I know that the past couple of weeks have been kind of interesting. Especially if you are somebody who reports on, you know, the upside is that we've got fall two sports that are going on right now. A lot of the local schools are enjoying, you know, having spring football. Who would have thunk that a pandemic would bring such enjoyment at an interesting time of year? But that's happening. You've got other sports that are going on as well. But we had an interesting story that took place with the South Shore community, the town of Duxbury. I know it's a delicate situation, and we wanted to just talk about it in retrospect. Give me your thoughts in regards to the fall two sports happening in the spring.
Well, I think it's a great opportunity to see your student athletes out there who were basically robbed of a season a couple of months ago when they realized that football just couldn't be played in the current times we were in because, as we all know, COVID-19 was still running rampant. But now there's a vaccine being distributed around. And at this point, I think I saw yesterday in the Boston Globe that over 70,000 people have received it to this point. So as you can expect, restrictions are being lifted. And it's good to see the kids on the field. We thought it was going to be kind of cold, you know, starting the season in March. But it's been actually gorgeous over the last 2-3 weeks, 60, 70 degrees, couldn't ask for a better environment for football overall, in my opinion.
And let's not forget, and I also want to remind folks that the Brendan also does broadcast of many of the sports here in the South Shore, teaming up with Ben Rabbi and doing it, as well as other colleagues here at WATD. And I just want to congratulate you on the calls of the game, whether it's yourself. We've got Quinn Kelly who does it. We have other individuals, but congratulations at least on calling some of those games, whether it's a weekend game or a weeknight game.
Yes, and I've had the opportunity to not just work for WATD, but be Big Live Communications, who has hired Ben and I to kind of join their emergency football team. We help with production as well. Overall, it's been a great season to this point, a lot of excitement. There has been some, as you mentioned, unique storylines that have developed, especially over the last week or so. But outside of that, it seems like everything's been going very well.
What is your understanding of the Duxbury football team and its legacy, knowing that, you know, how it has grown, the program has grown under Dave Mamron?
Well, as we mentioned, it's a touchy situation, and it involves probably one of the most successful programs, not just on the South Shore, but in the whole Commonwealth of Massachusetts. In, I think, 16 years or so, but just about that, Mamron has kind of built a program that has won 5 Super Bowls. That's not easy to do. A lot of schools have never even made it to a Super Bowl game, and he's brought them there, not just 5 winning times, but they've been there a couple other times on top of it. The most recent one being in 2019 when they played against a very, very tough Springfield Central team, and everyone was discussing whether Springfield Central, which is a much larger school, has a much larger student body, should be playing in the Division III ranks against a team like Duxbury. Problem is, the Western Mass format has been set up so where you can only have a certain number of teams participating in each division, so they got put in that slot, and they obviously ran into a buzzsaw. But then as the year went on and passed by, football season started up again. It looked like Duxbury was on pace to have another possible, not Super Bowl winning season, but a league championship winning season under the new regulations that the Patriot League has set up. They started off 2-0. But about a week ago, people started to notice that Coach Mamron wasn't on the sidelines. We didn't find out the true details until later in the week. And I'm sure you can dive a little bit more into that than I can at the moment.
Yeah, I would. The one thing I would add, so to folks who may or may not know, I know that the WATD newsroom has been reporting on it. There was a letter that was released by the school superintendent in regards to a situation where the offensive part of the ball, where it was being shouted out, there were audibles being mentioned that were in the Jewish persuasion, Auschwitz. There were other ones that related to Jewish, people of Jewish faith, and it was noticed. My understanding is it was something that was noticed, but yet it's something that has been. There's been whispers that other programs have been making comments. Whether it was another program that had heard it or somebody had heard it on a broadcast remains to be seen. But I guess I have to ask you, as an individual who follows high school sports, has there been any word as to whether the Duxbury football program is going to be able to resume play, or is there a possibility that their season is done for the year?
Honestly, at this time, I think it's still up in the air, which would be unfortunate to the student athletes and just being victims of this situation, not having a chance to play a season last fall, and now you look like you're building something, and then this issue pops up. Now, was this created by the student athletes, or was it created by the coaching staff? I can't answer that at this time, but it seems like it's been multi-sourced enough. I've seen Matt Feld from the Boston Herald, Trevor Hotz from the Duxbury Clipper and the Boston Globe. They did their research, and they made numerous calls to try and discover what was actually going on once this rumor started to bubble up. And it sounds like numerous officials kind of were on the same page and on the forefront of trying to point this out. And obviously with, you know, these times that we're dealing with, anti-Semitic language is absolutely prohibited. There's just no way you can survive that, no matter what the situation is. Even if it's minor, it still can do a program in. I don't know if Duxbury is going to have a chance to come back. We shall see, though. We'll see what the school decides to do going forward and see how they can possibly reschedule some of these games. But like I said, I feel for not just the student-athletes, but just the school in general. It's a very difficult situation to deal with at the moment.
And again, if you are just tuning in, we're privileged to be speaking with Brendan Conley, who wears multiple media hats. He's not only our crack sports reporter and broadcaster here at WATD, but he also does work with other media outlets, including, I believe, the Boston Herald. Am I correct, Brendan?
This is correct.
So I would ask you this, Brendan, and that is that with what's taking place with Duxbury, how does it affect the rest of the South Shore League or any of its opponents? Do you feel that it has an effect on the other teams that Duxbury was going to play?
Well, it does for sure. Duxbury being in the Patriot League's Keenan Division, if Duxbury is unable to continue playing, which I'm not sure of right now, they might be able to put something back together and once this storm kind of passes. But if they aren't, it's going to open up a lot of doors for other teams like the Hinghams, the Whitman Hansons, the Silver Lakes of the world to try and compete for a back side of the Patriot League championship. And then they would face, I believe, the winners of the Fisher Division. So whoever wins from that one, the Fisher Division includes Scituate, Pembroke, those smaller schools from that side, Hanover, that deal. It opens the door for these schools to possibly go on a long run here and possibly add to their trophy cases. But I would like to, if everything passes and everything is cools down and Duxbury has the opportunity to play again, despite the situation and the struggles that are associated with it, I think it would be probably, it would give us a better idea of who the best teams are out there. Like I said, though, this is a very difficult and very tense situation that we'll have to see how it develops over the next week or so.
What are some of the things that you've seen as a reporter and seeing what other colleagues are reporting? I mean, what are some of the things that you've seen that have been written and have been researched? Are you able to divulge any of that, or do you not have that on hand?
Well, I have seen some of the language that was reportedly used, and I will say it's pretty egregious, in my opinion. It's a very, very dark situation. Now, when it comes to play calling, a lot of teams will install very unique play calls that are easier to remember instead of just numbers and names of the direct plays. This is a level I haven't seen before. I've seen some weird calls out there, but if these reports are in fact true, it's a whole different animal here.
And there's no way to tell if this is something that's been systemic and has been happening for some time, or if this is just kind of a new revelation.
According to reports I've read, officials and reporters have been putting it out there that this seems to have developed over the last 5 years or so, maybe 10. Within the last decade or so, I would say, is when these calls reportedly started happening. Now, being a guy who's covered a couple of Duxbury football games, I myself did not hear these calls, but there are people who are much more in tune and who cover much more of the team than I do. And if this language was used, well, I don't know. It's going to be difficult for the team going forward and the school in general. I'm hoping that when all is said and done, everyone kind of settles down and everything kind of returns to normal, but it's going to be a while before it does, in my opinion, just based on the things I've seen people putting out there. I have not personally heard directly kind of the exact stuff that was used, but it was being reported that some of the language, well, I can't even use some of the language on the air. It's kind of risky. But it's like I said, it's difficult for all parties involved, whether it's the league itself or the Patriot League, or just Duxbury's football program going forward. I'm going to be curious to see what this does, because with Mamaron being gone, this is a whole new, this uncharted territory for the Dragons over there. This is a team that's been competing for years for state titles. How is that going to change? It remains to be seen.
Is it a matter of all of Mamaron's coaches be replaced? I mean, is it a matter of, like, you know, cleaning the program out and bringing in a new head coach and him bringing in his own people? Or do you pick from the remaining staff? Is it a matter of guilty by association?
Well, Duxbury has conducted its investigation, and I'm assuming that the ADs and their staff will make the best judgment on that. Tom Holgate has done a great job for the MIAA over the last year or so. This was kind of a surprise to a lot of people. I'm sure it depends on what the superintendent, John Antonucci, and his staff want to do. Do they want to just completely clean house, bring in some other guy from somewhere in eastern Massachusetts and see if they can rebuild? I think that's a possibility. But then again, those who know better probably know what the other coaches' involvements were. So I don't know for sure right now what their plan is, but I think that at some point they will make a great decision for the school.
And if you're tuning in, we are speaking with Brendan Conley, who is with the WATD Sports Department, and we're talking about the situation, the news that had broke recently in regards to some of the audibles being made by the Duxbury High School football team. You know what I find interesting, being an audiovisual guy and knowing that this is, you know, we're dealing in the times of COVID. We don't have many parents. I mean, you know, you're not allowed to have that many people in attendance. I mean, maybe that was a possibility of this being learned because of having less sound coming from the crowd, that someone was able to pick this up.
Yeah. Now, that might have been why. The question is, if that was the case, I'm questioning as to why. In this time and age, that it doesn't seem like players came out, because they would be the ones that would hear this the strongest. Maybe they're just used to the language, you know, being kids in high school. We all know what goes on in high school. So, like, there's some very bad language that is always being tossed around. So maybe they had become immune to it, I guess. But if this was the case, I mean, it's going to, like, it just seems like it's, based on what I've read, it might have been going on for a little longer than we thought.
Would it be safe to say, as we close out the segment, would it be safe to say that this is going to become a teachable moment?
Well, for sure. I mean, what they should tell these student athletes and is, first of all, to not use that language and not, you know, just decide to throw it around like that, because obviously it's a very touchy subject. We all know the past history of the last century or so, what has gone on within that faith group. Yeah. So that's the obvious lesson. The second one should be, in these times, don't say anything offensive, period. Like, you can't get away with it anymore. It's a totally different environment. It's changed a lot. But the implementation of social media, you see on Twitter every day that there's the fear of cancel culture and all that sort of thing, and people trying to put each other in place. You got to just keep everything under your vest, man. Don't express any offensive terms. Don't go down that road. It never ends up doing well for you. Just as an athlete yourself, it could ruin your future. So just in general, avoid using offensive language altogether. And hopefully for these athletes, I'm hoping that they get a second chance. It's going to be, like I said, though, multiple times here, it's going to be difficult for the next week or two as this storm goes through.
Well, Brendan, we want to thank you for coming on. And I know it's a very, very sensitive subject, and I hope that our listeners understand that Brendan and I were, you know, discussing this prior to coming on air, as to wanting to make sure that as we discuss this, we did it in a proper way. We're not looking, we're just looking to have an open discussion about it, as being Brendan, somebody who covers these high school sports and does a fantastic job. The whole WATD sports team does a fantastic job in covering this, and the news department, of course, doing its job, again, being able to get this information, sharing not only the superintendent's statement, but also from the the deposed coach as well, as he released a statement. Well, Brendan, thank you for your time, and I look forward to having you on to talk about other sports-related items, whether it's high school sports or the upcoming draft for the New England Patriots.
That's going to be interesting. I saw that San Francisco moved up to the number 3 pick, and now the common idea of thought is that they're going to be trying to take a young quarterback out of the draft, and that Jimmy G may be available. Who knows? 49ers said that he isn't, but we don't know. We don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I think the Arizona Cardinals said the same thing about Josh Rosen before they drafted their current starting quarterback. So, yeah, anything's possible.
That is true. Hopefully, we'll see if they can bring Jimmy G back here. I think that would be great for the team, but Belichick knows better than all of us, that's for sure.
Amen. There he is, Brendan Conley with the WATD Sports Department. That's going to do it for the first hour of Monday Night Talk. We are going to step aside when we come back in just a moment. Alex Bezanson from the Plymouth County Democratic League will be joining me. Stay tuned.
WATD-FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
As a dentist, I know what my patients are saying during times when they really can't speak.
Mm-hmm.
She says her gums are irritated.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you can do? Absolutely. You can try New Crest Advanced Gum Restore.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, New Crest Advanced Gum Restore. It detoxifies below the gum line to restore your gums back to health in just 7 days. Exactly. Healthy gums, healthy mouth.
New Crest Advanced Gum Restore. Healthy, beautiful smiles for life.
Guys, confidence can go a long way. And confidence in the bedroom can make it your favorite room in the house. Blue Chew's chewable tablets can help. You get the same active ingredients as in Viagra and Cialis, but at a fraction of the cost. Prescriptions are filled online with no trips to the doctor or pharmacy. Visit BlueChew.com for details and safety information. Use the promo code BETTER and receive the first month of your active plan free. That's BlueChew.com. Promo code BETTER.
In the year 2020, a powerful replica of the Vietnam Wall in Washington, D.C. will be permanently displayed at the Veterans Memorial Bicentennial Park in Fall River for veterans, families, and visitors from our local area, as well as all of Massachusetts and Rhode Island. The wall will honor the men and women who made the heroic and ultimate sacrifice in Vietnam. Help us make this very special memorial a reality. Please visit VietnamMemorialWall.org.
Are you home with the little ones? Would a story help? Tiny and Sons to the rescue.
Daddy, tell me a bedtime story.
Well, once upon a time...
I don't like that story.
Okay, once there were two hippos, racing hippos.
Where did they race?
At the hippodrome, before a hip-to-hip crowd of 100,000 hypocrites.
Was there a prize?
Yeah, but first the hippos had to race fast enough to get by the hippogriff.
What's a hippogriff?
Very scary. The hippogriff had the wings, claws, and head of a griffin, the body and hindquarters of a horse.
What's a griffin?
A fabulous beast with the head and wings of an eagle, body of a lion.
Was there an elf?
Oh, yeah, he held the starting gun.
Did the gun go off?
Scared the hippogriff, who ran into the hypocrite, smashed the windscreen of his chariot.
Did they call off the race?
No, Tiny and Sons came, replaced the windscreen, insurance paid.
Who won the race?
The tortoise, but that's another story.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Glass. We replace your windshield and insurance pays. 1-888-64-TINIES.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Joining us for this segment is Alex Bezanson. Alex is not only a Abington selectman, but he is also the chair of the Plymouth County Democratic League. And we like to have regular conversations with Alex because he usually is the person who speaks with candidates who are seeking office
on all different levels. It isn't just municipal races, but if somebody's running for the state level, or maybe somebody who might be running for one of the federal offices, Congress or Senate, he's there. Alex, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. Always great to be with you.
So what's going on? I mean, it's spring, and a lot of times in every community, or in most communities, I should say, you have town elections, and you have town meetings. Some communities like Brockton, they have city elections, and those fall every other year. I believe this year for Brockton, it is later this fall. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about maybe some of the spring races that we could see for office.
Yeah, so spring is the municipal time, that's for sure. Abington has our election coming up on April 24th, just a few weeks away. Town meeting, I believe, is May 21st. So, yeah, and that's the small towns on the South Shore and probably throughout the state. This is their big time. But unfortunately, because of COVID, it's, same as last year. We just can't really do anything. There's no fundraisers out there. There has been a couple of standout sign holdings. But it's just not like like the old days, I guess, when you're out shaking hands and kissing babies and stuff. You can't do those things anymore. But, it's different. A lot of social media campaigns, I guess, and hopefully the candidates are getting on your show and their local cable shows. So that's how they have to do it.
Well, you were somewhat of a victim of COVID when you ran for your, a second time around for selectmen. What was it? I mean, refresh everybody's memory what it was like, because you didn't have your race when it was normally scheduled. It actually got pushed back.
Yeah. Actually, I think things are a little better now, obviously, than they were last April. We were scheduled to have our election the last Saturday in April. Next to last Saturday in April last year, and that didn't happen. COVID had just begun the month before, so it was new. People didn't know what was going on, and like I said, we know a little bit more about it now. So Abington put the election off until June 24th on a Tuesday, which was odd because municipal elections are usually on the weekend on Saturdays. And we could not do any campaigning whatsoever. We didn't do standouts. We put signs out maybe the month before, or I think I put my signs out around June 1st, and just hope for the best. It was a very low turnout for a municipal election. Mike Kaloji, there were five of us that ran. Mike Kaloji got 480 or so. I got roughly 380, and the two of us won with those few votes. Hopefully, with the mask and, the COVID precautions that we're taking and what we've learned over the last year, hopefully we'll get a bigger turnout this year for the municipal elections throughout the South Shore.
Have you heard from candidates? Has the Plymouth County Democratic League heard from candidates? I mean, again, knowing that these are nonpartisan races, but I would think that you still have candidates reaching out for some sort of assistance.
I do. Well, we'll start with Abington. Tim Chapin is up for re-election. Tim is a very good friend of mine, and Tim is a great selectman, a great chairman. He's done a great job. So, obviously, I'm hoping he gets in, and he's actually not a Democrat. So it is a nonpartisan election, the municipals. But Tim has done a great job, and I certainly hope he gets in. And then we have two other good candidates that have been very active in town for many years. Alex Haggerty, who's on the Board of Health now. He's on the Capital Planning Committee. and he's done other things in town, and he's not a Democrat. So I wish him well as well. And then Christine Hendrickson, another non-Democrat that I've known for many years, and she's on the sewer commission. I think she's been on there 7 or 8 years. And, you know, she's a small business owner and very familiar in town. So in Abington, we have 3 Republicans running, and that's not going to stop me from voting. I'm still voting, and I'm voting for 2 of them. And, you know, I wish them all the very best. Municipal elections are not supposed to be partisan, but they are to some degree, as you know. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the Plymouth County Democratic League. That's the whole purpose of Democratic town committees and Republican town committees. You try to get your members and your people on the boards, and it starts at the town level. And, you know, I've told this story many times that I was connected with John Walsh and Kevin Whalen and the Democratic Town Committee in Abington back in the early 90s. And John Walsh asked me to go on the Conservation Commission, which I did. And then I was on as a Water Commission, then a Selectman, and then I actually ran for State Representative, as you know. So it does start at the town level. John Walsh started out as a selectman. I think he was on the finance committee, then a selectman. And now John Walsh is in Washington as chief of staff for Ed Markey. So like I said, it does definitely starts at the local level. And, you know, I really encourage people, as I go around Plymouth County, I encourage people to get involved in local elections, school department, school committee, board of health, zoning board, planning board, whatever, but get involved.
I have to ask you this, and that is I realize a philosophical difference between other Democrats and the Republicans. I don't want to say all Republicans, because you've already kind of named a couple of Republicans who are seeking either a re-election or election on the municipal level. But I see the you know, starting from the bottom philosophy by the Democrats, you know, maybe getting at the school committee level, or maybe get appointed to a certain committee, and then work your way up to different committees before you go for a state-level job, you know, a state-level office, or even higher, where I've seen other candidates who are non-Democrats who will, out of the gate, go, I'm going to run for state rep, or I'm going to run for Congress. And, you know, when I've had conversations, and not to name names, but when I've had conversations, I'm like, have you held office before? Or like, no, I just feel that I'm well-suited for this office, and, you know, I'm going to swing for the fences by running for this office. Why is there such a philosophical difference when it comes to running for office these days?
I don't know. I'm a firm believer in that you need to learn about the system, and I'm not taking that away from anyone that's right. Holding office now. As you know, my state representative, she's doing a great job. And but she didn't hold a town office before she ran for state representative. But she's learned the job, and she's doing a great job, and it can be done. It's just that I think that you need to be a little more rounded. You need to understand how the town government works if you're going to be representing the towns. And if you're going to be a selectman, I think you need to understand how some of the other boards work. And most of the time, not always, but most of the time, we do get people that have already served on other boards before they do run for selectman or state representative or other boards. I mean, Jeff Deal was on the finance committee in Whitman before he ran for state rep. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the time that's how you have it, but not always. And, you know, some people just end up getting the job and they do well. Others don't do so well and they don't stay there that long.
Sure. And if you want to, I mean, I can throw out names. Mike Brady, who I've known for many years, you know, currently a state senator But, you know, he started out as a city councilor in Brockton, became a state representative, and then ascended to being a state senator.
Correct.
Patrick O'Connor, another individual, same way, where, you know, Patrick was on the Weymouth Town Council and, you know, ran for state senate and was successful. There was that progression and,
exactly.
and being able to also, I also see it as a way to build name recognition. If people recognize you, at least in some part of the district, you have a better chance.
Correct. Yeah. And I think you learn a lot of things. I learned a lot my first year, my first term on the Board of Selectmen. And there's definitely a learning curve there. Most people go in and they think, you know, it runs a certain way, and you get in there and it's not as easy, or things don't move as quickly as you would like. You know, being in business, I like to get things done, and you go in there and you know you have to do this today and get it done. It doesn't work that way in government, and it is frustrating sometimes. And I think a lot of people get in there and they get surprised at how difficult it is to get some things done. But we do have a good board here in Abington right now. And sorry to see Jim Conley leave. But this board we have now with the town manager, we all get along great. And it just really clicks with Scott and the other members of the board right now. But I would like to take this opportunity just to thank Jim Conley for his years of work for the town of Abington. He was on the Conservation Commission with me for several years. We're close friends with his family and my family and his wife and my wife and his kids. And, you know, Jim has been a good friend and very well known in Abington and very well liked in Abington, and he will be missed.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Alex Bezanson. Alex is not only an Abington selectman, but he is also the chairman of the Plymouth County Democratic League, helping to mobilize and help candidates of all varying races to understand what it is about getting out and campaigning, especially in these tough times. Alex, I know it's kind of, it may be earlier, it might be to a certain point with some of the races in and around the county. Any particular races that you're eyeballing right now?
Yeah, a few people have reached out to me. Obviously, we have the three selectmen candidates in Abington. Jackie Abrams and Lisa Augusta, who only served one term on the school committee, have decided not to run for re-election. I was happy when both of them got elected 3 years ago, and they've done a great job. It's just for whatever reasons, they both decided not to run. But we have two other great candidates that will be filling the seats. Heidi Hernandez, who has three girls. I call them the three amigos from years ago in a costume thing, and they'll never live that down. And Julie Groom, who I don't know that well, but I've heard very good things about her. So I think the school committee will be in good hands. The Board of Health, we have three candidates for two positions. Chris Schultz, the chairman, is running for re-election, and Melissa Pond, who I'm not familiar with, and Kevin Whalen are running for Linda Dickey's seat. And Linda is a member of the Democratic Town Committee, and she I think she served three terms. I think she's been on 9 years, and she's just ready to retire from the Board of Health. So we have a scenario with the Board of Health that we have three people for two seats, but if Alex Haggerty wins the selectman seat, that will open up another seat, and then the process usually is the Board of Health and the Board of Selectmen would appoint somebody to fill Alex's seat, and I would assume that would be the person that comes in third in this race. That would be my preference anyway. East Bridgewater, not much going on there. Carol Julius just finishing up her first term and up for re-election unopposed. But they're going to have some interesting next year, I guess, interesting few months. Their town administrator just left for whatever reason.
Yep.
So they'll be looking for a new town administrator. So that will be an important decision that the Board of Selectmen will have to make. We'll have to see how that goes. Whitman.
I was going to say, interesting enough, you know, you had a similar situation. I shouldn't say a similar situation, but you had a changing of the guard, a town administrator last year for Abington. And, you know, you touched on it earlier, how the relationship is blossoming between the Board of Selectmen and the new town administrator. So hopefully East Bridgewater can experience the same success.
Yeah, Abington was very, very lucky. We had four candidates, as you know, and in my opinion, three excellent candidates, all local guys, and Abington would have been great with any one of them. I'm happy Scott is there. Scott just seems the perfect fit for this time, and like I said, it fits in very well with the Board of Selectmen. But the other two candidates we have landed jobs.
Yep.
Mike Mullen is down in
Dighton.
Lincoln Heineman's over in Whitman now.
Perfect.
So I know Scott has reached out to Lincoln, and Lincoln's talked to Scott. You know, maybe we're going to be doing some, you know, joint things with Whitman, and possibly talking about a planner maybe for Abington, Whitman, and Rockland. So it's good to have town managers and town administrators that we all know, we all get along with, and we all know that we can work with. So hopefully, for East Bridgewater's sake, they can find someone that will be a long-term solution for them. Whitman Selectman race, that's the only one I'm really been talking to anyone about. Dan Salvucci, who I served on the Plymouth County Advisory Board with, he's in his 12th term, I believe.
Something like that, yep.
Yeah, and Rosemary Conley is his opponent. Papers are in. Rosemary ran last year, and she only lost by about 40 votes, I think, 40 or 60 votes. So that should be an interesting race. They are two opposite ends of the spectrum. So it will be interesting to see who gets turns out to vote in Whitman. What else do we have? We have Middleborough, Alan Fawley, who was a former selectman and a state rep candidate. He's running for planning board now. Rich Young, who's on the school committee, running for re-election. He's a member of Plymouth County Democratic League also. At Pembroke, we have Tom Driscoll. He's a local 7 iron worker. He's running for selectman. I'm not sure who's up for re-election in Pembroke, Kevin. I don't know if you do.
I do not. The only thing that comes to mind would be a John Brown, but I don't think he's up for another year. But that could be a follow-up conversation in a couple of weeks where we do an update as to some of the races.
Who else we have here?
It is worth noting, you mentioned the Whitman race. Whitman's election is, I believe, the third Saturday in May.
In May. They do it in May. Abington does it in April. Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm not sure if papers have closed in Whitman.
Yep.
But I know I spoke with Rosemary yesterday. She says she has turned her papers in.
Yep, I believe that last week, last Friday might have been the last day. I can double check that, and again, that could be a conversation that we can have maybe in a few weeks, just as a follow up, and as we discuss more races that are popping up in and around the area. I know that in Duxbury the only real race in Duxbury was school committee. And I believe that's due to be decided. But again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Alex Bazanson, who is an Abington selectman, but just as important, he's the chairman of the Plymouth County Democratic League. And we're talking about candidates and
candidates that are getting out. Alex, if there is a candidate who is tuned into this program and they are, in fact, a registered Democrat, I mean, is there a way for them to get in touch with you and for you to walk them through how to be a better, you know, campaigner?
The purpose of the Democratic Town Committee is to, Plymouth County Democratic League and the town committees is to help candidates get elected and to actually recruit them. So, again, because of COVID, things have been a little different this year. When I took over 2 years ago, my big push was at the municipal level. And to get all the towns set up with all the town committee set up with Vote Builder. It's a program that Democrats have that can analyze who votes. Do they vote in the municipal elections or they just vote in the presidential elections? And you can narrow it down and get your good voters, and you can target voters if you're going to be out knocking on doors. We can give you a list that, these 500 people vote in every single municipal election. They lean Democrat, and, they are probably going to vote for you if you can get them out. So, we can help our candidates that way. We'll advertise through email and Facebook to get people down there to help them knock on doors or stand out and hold signs either before the election or on election day. But as far as fundraising, stuff like that, it's pretty difficult to do right now. But there are other ways, like I mentioned earlier, social media is very, very big. And I think that's the way you have to run your campaigns right now. So hopefully some of our candidates will be successful.
I think the thing I would ask you is while social media has its strengths, it's a double-edged sword. It could also be a toxic area for candidates as well.
Yeah, absolutely it can, but it works both ways,
You'd mentioned earlier that there's a limit as far as, I've been seeing standouts as of late. What's the general idea of a standout for folks who don't know or who don't understand the political process?
Well, even in the Democratic Party, there's a lot of discussion on that. Signs don't vote. The way that I guess the younger generation is campaigning is more direct contact through text, phone calls, social media. And a lot of people think holding signs is a waste of time. But I guess I'm kind of old school. I think the visibilities work. I think the more you see a name, the more chance you're going to vote, especially for people who are not involved like us. People that work in Boston and leave at 6:30 in the morning, come back at 6 at night, and go home, and they basically sleep here, but they vote. If they see signs, they see people out there waving, they're going to remember that. And I think there's a lot of people out there still that I get calls on election day a couple of days before from friends that aren't involved but want to vote. Who do I vote for? Because they don't know the candidates. Right. So I think visibility is very important in a campaign. And I've had this argument with several people about that, but I still think signs and standouts and a big crowd, I think it helps. I really do.
Well, if you're going to call yourself a registered voter, how important do you think it is for folks to know and understand their candidates? I mean, you as somebody who has run for office, I mean, share that with the folks who may not fully understand the scope of why you should know who, especially on the municipal level, who you elect is important.
It's extremely important. And nothing grinds my gears, as my friend says, more than seeing people complain on Facebook or Twitter or social media about the Board of Selectmen or about the school committee or whatever, and then we find out they don't even vote. So, you know, voting is a right. Voting, you should be doing your civic duty, especially in this day and age. There's talk about changing voting laws, and you know, I don't want to really get into national politics, but look what Georgia just voted. In my opinion, to suppress some voting, and we can't let that happen. If you want to complain, you want to get involved, you need to get out there and vote, and you need to start on the municipal level. We have, I think, 12,000, 11,000 registered voters in Abington, and we struggle to get 1,000 out for a municipal election. But you have that many people complaining on Facebook when something doesn't go the way they want. They complain about taxes. They complain about, you know, not enough teachers, not enough police officers. They complain about everything, but yet they don't get out and vote. We have 11,000 registered voters in town. We should have huge elections in the municipal elections, and we don't. So that's something that really, I don't know how you change that. People just don't care, a lot of them. So.
Well, we've plumb run out of time. We got about a minute left here in our conversation. If folks want to reach out to you, if they want to reach out to the Plymouth County Democratic League, how can they do that?
Well, they can reach out to me personally at alexbizanson@yahoo.com. My cell phone number is 781-953-1236. And you can find us at Plymouth County Democratic League on Facebook. And I just want to give a shout out to one other candidate that's a member of the Democratic State Committee running for selectman in Hingham. That's Joe Kelly, and he's a local 103 guy. Great guy. So Hingham, get out and vote.
Excellent. Well, we want to thank you again for joining us, Alex.
Thank you, Kevin. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in to this segment of Monday Night Talk, as Alex Bizanson has been our guest. We're going to step aside for a moment, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
As a dentist, I know what my patients are saying during times when they really can't speak.
Mm-hmm.
She says her gums are irritated.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you can do? Absolutely. You can try New Crest Advanced Gum Restore.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, New Crest Advanced Gum Restore. It detoxifies below the gum line to restore your gums back to health in just 7 days.
Mm-hmm. Healthy mouth.
Exactly. Healthy gums, healthy mouth.
New Crest Advanced Gum Restore. Healthy, beautiful smiles for life.
Guys, confidence can go a long way. And confidence in the bedroom can make it your favorite room in the house. Blue Chew's chewable tablets can help. You get the same active ingredients as in Viagra and Cialis, but at a fraction of the cost. Prescriptions are filled online with no trips to the doctor or pharmacy. Visit BlueChew.com for details and safety information. Use the promo code BETTER and receive the first month of your active plan free. That's BlueChew.com, promo code BETTER.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Joining us for this segment is Paula Harris. Paula with WH Cornerstone Investment. But Paula is also an author. And we're here to talk a little bit about a book that she's part of. She's one of 36 writers in a book called Life Lessons in Success. Paula, welcome to the segment.
Kevin, thrilled to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
I guess, first off, when did you seek out the services of a Mr. Jack Canfield, and how was he instrumental in this particular project?
Absolutely. So in 2018, my husband, Bill, and I decided to go to what's called Breakthrough to Success. It's a 5-day program that Jack Canfield offers. It was in Scottsdale, Arizona. I signed up like a year in advance because I just wanted that structure to like continue to help me become a better version of myself. And how I really, I was very fortunate. Some friends, our friends, Deb and Steve, gave us a copy of Success Principles for Christmas a couple of years before. And I read it and was like, this book is awesome. And so I sought out Jack so I could spend some time learning from him, the master, ourselves.
So what was it? This was a journey that happened in 2019. Is that correct?
So the first program I went to was Breakthrough to Success, loved it, and realized these success principles need to be out in the world. More people, if they understood simple things like E plus R equals O, an event happens, we can't control the event, we can control our response, which then affects the outcome. So it was like, wow, these are simple things that if more people knew it, they could live a much more a life that could bring more fulfillment to them. So while I was at that 5-day program, they talked about being trained as a Canfield methodology trainer. So I decided to sign up and I did 14 days of live training with Jack and a team in California during the year 2019. So it was in two segments, first 7 days in Long Beach and then 7 days in Palm Springs. And there were 60 of us that were part of the training group, training and trainers.
Does it matter what one's definition of success is when it comes to embarking on a training like this?
Interesting. I think success is a very individual decision. I mean, for some people, getting out of bed is a success. I hope that, you know, for their whole life, that isn't the total ambition. But for someone who maybe has a lot of illnesses, just getting up and getting dressed may be. But for most of us, you know, having bigger goals, bigger visions, having a mission for our lives, I think helps us get more out of life as opposed to just coasting through day after day, doing the same thing. You know, you need to have some breakthrough goals that help take you to the next level. And being a part of this book project was kind of one of those breakthrough goals for me.
So I would ask you is that anybody that you've had a chance to talk to that deems themselves successful, do you hear them say that I was able to gain this on their own, or is that not always, that's not the truth?
Another good question. Some people, you know, I've tended to be a rugged individualist. Yeah, people can do things on their own, but when I think true success happens for more people, they have leveraged the advice of others. They've included other people in their projects, in their success. And actually, sort of a side book project, not book project, but a book I just read recently by Dan Sullivan. He has a book, Dan Sullivan and Dr. Benjamin Hardy, called Who Not How. So we tend to think about all the time, how am I going to get this done? What am I going to do? How am I going to make this happen? But when you start to think about who can I surround myself to help make this happen, it changes everything. You don't no longer have to be the only one to get it done to reach that success. Bring the right people in and success will happen. A greater chance of success will happen.
And Jack Canfield is an individual who is, he's world renowned. He's a number one New York best-selling Times author.
Yep.
And so as a part of this project, you got to write a chapter in this new book, correct?
This is true. And Jack very nicely wrote the foreword for the book for us. And we actually had a virtual launch party on Sunday the 21st, the date 3-2-1. And Jack showed up and gave us congratulations because we are, the group are all Canfield methodology trainers that got together to write this book.
So what was it like for you to, while you're involved in this as an author, you're writing it, what was the process like for you to write, you know, about your own success?
So I'll just back up. You know, when we were finishing our training, like you're on a high, you want to take this material to the world. And somebody came up with the idea, what if we together put our stories together and created a book? So a woman, Angie, took the lead on that and people put their hands up 36 of us in the end stuck with it. A few people dropped out along the way because it's a big commitment. When you're writing a book as a team, we decided that we would do a lot of the roles ourselves rather than paying someone to do it all. We did have a publisher that helped us and guide us, but each person had to contribute to the team in some way. So there was a team of editors, there were a team of people who did the layout team. I was on the marketing team. I'm on the social media side of things. So, you know, we had deadlines we had to meet. We had to come up with a theme for our chapter, and then everybody did their own theme, and then the team had to weave it together to make it a, sort of a build in a coherent, I won't say it's a full story, but things build throughout so that the principles kind of shine.
So then that lets me ask, what was your theme?
Ah, yes. My theme was, when the student is ready, the teachers appear. So I have tended to be a bit of a individual, rugged, do-it-myself type person. I take a lot on my own shoulders, and I am learning how to bring more who's in my life. So I talked about, there's a couple of themes in my story. I talked about actually having attended a Tony Robbins program, which was life-changing for me. It was his Date with Destiny program. And I had gone to that in the December of 2013. And just, I got the opportunity to go up on stage with Tony, which was a pretty cool situation to have happen. My number was picked. And Kevin, we've known each other for a while. You may have noticed I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. And I believe I'm going to be lucky. So when we got these little ping pong balls at the beginning of the check-in process, I just rubbed it, wrote my name on it as we were told. And I said, I will win. I will win. So Tony runs this, it's called the wheel. They bring out this wheel. It's like a prize wheel. And they get the audience ramped up. It's to keep the energy up. And so he pulls a ping pong ball out and he says, you know, team number. And he calls some other team. It wasn't mine. And a name. Well, that person doesn't show up. They're not in the room yet, which, like, that's bad. You're not there when Tony's there. You just lost. So he crushes it up. Next thing you know, he says, team 24. I'm like, that's my team. And I said, it's going to be me. And then he yells out, Paula Harris. I was like, that's me. So I go running up on stage, and Tony, you know, they make you do a bunch of quizzes and different things, but started off dancing. And I got the crowd really riled up, really excited. And I played along. I played full out. You know, Tony asked you to play full out. I played full out. So he asked me what I wanted to win. I said I wanted to win Life and Wealth Mastery. No idea what it was. Had never been to a Tony program. I didn't win that, but I won a ticket to a program called Unleash the Power Within. So that was exciting. I leave the stage, and I'm meeting everybody. I'm meeting so many people there. It's really exciting. But if I realized two things happened. One, 2 days later, there's a woman at my seat waiting for me, and she says, hi, I'm here from the Platinum Partner Desk. And this is a group of people who pay somewhere between $75,000 and like $100,000 to be in Tony's inner circle for the year. One of our plats, he saw you on stage and he saw that you didn't win what you wanted to win. And he's anonymously gifting it to you. So I got gifted this 9-day program, Life and Wealth Mastery. It was like, wow. So opening up, being vulnerable, allowed people into my life. The other big story is, I got there before the program even started. I meet a chiropractor from Plymouth, Mass. Like, we're in Palm Springs, and I meet this chiropractor. And I said, oh, you know, from the Duxbury area. And he says, what? When you go home, you go meet, make an appointment with Dr. Katina Manning. She's a chiropractor. She will change your life. So I'm feeling divinely guided at this point. I went home, made that appointment on December 23rd of 2013. She's still in my life, and she helped me. She continues to help me transform my life. Big issue that I was dealing with at the time was I was overweight. And I was frustrated, and I didn't know how to get that weight off. And she helped me through a bunch of ways to do that. So I was ready to make change happen. I had gone to Tony Robbins. I listened to this guy that I had never met before, and I followed the leads and brought these mentors into my life. And I'm a different person today than I was back in 2013.
You're just tuning in to the program. We are speaking with Paula Harris We know her. We've chatted with her about WH Cornerstone Investment and being smart, being financial preparedness. But this is a different conversation, talking with Paula Harris, the author, as she's part of a newly released book called Life Lessons in Success. And she's giving us kind of a little inside peek to this particular book. Make sure you stay tuned, and we'll give you, as she is showing, that she has a copy of the book that I believe that you can get on Amazon. But again, we'll give you those details in just a few moments. Going back to what you had just described, do you yourself feel that life puts certain people in our paths, whether it's for the best reasons or to test us?
Another good question. I definitely believe that people are put into our lives for a reason. And it is our job to be awake enough to see why they're there. And yeah, this is kind of a side story, but yesterday I was talking to my husband about a high school friend. She texted me this morning, kind of out of the blue. The sad news was she was texting me to tell me that her mom had just passed away. And the reason she was reached out to me right at that moment was she was going through her mother's purse, and there was a Valentine's Day card from me in her mother's purse. It was like, okay, if that's not supposed to happen at that moment, her mom just died 3 days ago, to connect us back, to do all that. You know, I didn't have to pick up the phone and call her, but I did. And we spent the next half hour just telling beautiful stories. We were meant to be there right at that moment. And then there's the warning signs. Like I'm getting better at reading people's energies. Like there's someone in your life that causes a lot of chaos, and you know, you need to back away. You don't want to be drawn to the moth on that one, because they're going to just suck you into something that may not be good for you. So they may redirect you. If you listen and pay attention, you can get redirected to where you're supposed to be going. As opposed to that's a growing up. Remember the danger, Will Robinson, danger, that's a danger sign. Like there's definitely, those people. And again, we have to be awake enough to pay attention to the inner signs that we feel, you know, the stomach's tightening, the breath shortening, like, yeah, maybe that's not good. Or that's just like really good excitement and you just feel that good energy. So yeah, there are people brought to us for all different types of reasons.
Interesting. The sci-fi fan in me always loved watching Lost in Space, not only the older version, but they have a newer version. And of course, you're referencing the robot on Lost in Space. Very well done. Talking about some of the folks, you know, besides yourself, you had 30 plus writers who joined you on this adventure. Were all these people local people? Were they just from the United States? Or was it beyond?
Oh, it's an international group. A couple from India, one from Estonia, from the UK, one of the lots from the US. Let's see, Barcelona. One of the women has now moved to Mexico. So we are all over the world. And that's another really interesting part, is because one, you realize we're all human beings. We all have the same struggles and issues, and no matter where we live. So, you know, I'm big on this. These days we're dividing ourselves rather than trying to find the commonalities. There's a lot of commonalities from people everywhere. We're all human beings. And it's really neat to get those different perspectives on how people see things throughout the world. I mean, it's been so much fun to get get to know people in India. I mean, they live similar, but also very different from us. And just absolutely fascinating to learn the different stories and how people, their cultures affect, you know, how they live their lives.
Have you had yourself a chance to sit down and peruse the book and see some of the stories? Did you have a chance to be as part of the editorial team to see it as it was coming together? And what's some of the things that you picked out that you feel that our viewers, our listeners are going to enjoy if they pick this book up?
Yeah, I was not on the editorial team, and I'll be honest, I am not a fan of reading things, you know, on the computer. So my book has come in. I have read probably about 10 chapters now, and It's all types of things. A lot of it, you know, how do you heal relationships and move forward? One of the women, her parents came home and declared that we no longer going to celebrate Christmas, which is 12 years old. Oh, by the way, we're no longer going to celebrate any holidays. They actually chose to bring their children into a cult, a religious cult. How she lived her life and broke out from there. Another woman's story, you know, how she graduated from the at the age of 15 from high school, went on to college, how she lived in four different countries by the time she was four. Like, amazing how she adapted through life. You know, how people have healed relationships with dying siblings. How people have always used positivity to get them through all the hardships in their life. You know, how people have just buckled down and say they know that they need to set a goal, and like when they put their mind to it, they can make things happen. You know, I don't even have enough money to make the mortgage, and I just pick up the phone and I dial for clients, and oh my gosh, I made $16,000. People's stories are all over the place, but I think every reader will resonate with so many of them. There's so, we're all human beings. We all have aspects of ups and downs in our life. And a book like this really speaks to us in different ways. And it's the type of book that you can pick up again in a year and it will speak to you in other ways, which is really kind of powerful.
So what is it like to know that you and your husband have a commonality when it comes to being authors? Did you go to him when you were planning to write your chapter and get his take on it?
Interesting. Despite that we worked together, lived together, we both did these projects very separately. So I did not really involve him, and he wrote his book and he, you know, he did that on his own. So we're kind of coming together as being authors in the same household from different ways, but it's a really neat feeling. And the other part that's really cool is how much people really appreciate that you took the time to do this. And it's a labor of love to put a book into the world. The other thing, which this was a big deal, Kevin, with the 36 authors, we all opened our hearts. Like, Bill's book is a little more technical, but we opened our hearts and shared our vulnerabilities. And that's a big deal. And you put that out literally into the world. I mean, this is going to be read in all corners of the world. And people now know things about you that you may not have shared so publicly. So that's a very interesting feeling. It's a little weird to be kind of so public and vulnerable because you don't know how people will take it. And you hope, you know, actually I led an invocation as we did the kickoff the other day. And we basically asked for protection that this book was put out in love to help and serve others, that it be received in that way so that we would all be protected with our stories.
What is that like to bring your guard down and to be vulnerable to a greater number of people? Some people who may know you, people who may not. What kind of a feeling is that?
It's definitely one when you kind of like take a deep breath, breathe. You know, I started the invocation off. Okay, we're going to take a deep breath in. We're going to take a deep breath out. You know, I have a lot of faith in my life and trust in God. So for me, it makes that easier because I know he's got my back and that I'll be protected. But you got to believe that good will come. And you've got to believe that you put it out in a form of goodness and love, that will come back to you. And if people have issues, you know, that's going to be their issue and their problem. I mean, it's just sort of like, you know, trolling through social media. You're always going to find the haters. Tom Brady said the haters are going to hate. I think it was him who said it, but whoever said it, you know, you just can't live your life so protected. Like, the, you know, they talk a lot about the seed falls on the ground. If that seed doesn't break open, it dies. It never happens. Nothing, no life comes from it. You've got to crack open the seed of your hardness in order to have like rebirth and life and to be able to go on and do other things. So I'm going to trust and hope that it's well received.
We are joined by Paula Harris. She is one of 36 authors in a new book called Life Lessons in Success. I love asking this particular question to any author. What is it like to see your words in a book?
It is really cool. And this book, you know, I mean,
It's like it's a real book. It's got like a nice glossy cover. The
I'd sell it. Paper feels good.
Yeah, like the paper feels good. Like it's a, you know, it's like a book. It's real. And like to know one of the women I'm in a mastermind group with five women, and one of them said, "We will be together in this book forever." Like we are linked. I am linked to these 36 people in a really special way. And it's like, that's really powerful. Like that's out there forever. You know what I mean? It could be picked up in 100 years. I mean, like, wow, to know that you're in some way, your legacy lives on. It's really, it's awe inspiring.
Are there any individuals in the book that you are regularly communicating with and have forged probably a friendship for the remainder of your days?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say more than half of the book, I am in regular contact, you know, weekly, if not monthly. And then everyone in the book, I have a real personal relationship with. I mean, when you go through a Canfield program, and I mean, the amount of stories, I mean, we were working, you know, good 10 hours a day together. You heard very deep stories about people's lives. I am hugely connected to the people in this book, and will forever be because of this and because of our training. I feel very blessed by it. You know, one of the guys in the book is from India. He wants to transform the lives of a million Indians, people in India. And like, that's a huge goal. I mean, there's a lot of people in India, but that like, he's on it. He's going to make it happen. He's so inspirational. So it's really powerful.
If you were to give advice to anybody who would want to embark on writing a book, what would you like to share in at least being a part of your first book?
Yep. Well, if it's a co-authored book, because a couple of people have asked me lately, patience. You need a lot of patience because everybody operates at different speeds. Despite the fact that you have common goals, you have to sort of push and nudge a little. I think also, you know, the discipline of writing. So I have a friend who's writing a book right now that's going to be just him. You know, you've got to write every day. Even if you end up putting one word on the page, you have to have a set time and discipline to do it. And that the discipline is everything. And you have to have your quiet space where you do your best work. There's a guy, Donald Miller, who's written a bunch of books. I mean, he's built a little shed. I mean, I'm sure it's more than a little shed, but in his yard, which is his writing studio, and he chooses not to have windows. You know, you've got to be disciplined every day. And you will also probably throw away many versions of what you write, but that's okay. It gets going to get you to that higher level, that deeper, clearer thinking. So don't be afraid of throwing away things. So those are my couple of pieces of advice: patience, discipline.
I know this is a fresh, this is a new project. You have reached the end of the road. There is a finished product. Maybe it's a little soon to ask you this. Has this inspired you to consider writing something either on your own or with a smaller team?
Very good. It's interesting. My mastermind group met yesterday and we asked each other, so does this make you want to do another book? And we all raised our hand. Yeah, I do. I'm actually working on a book right now. It's a widow's journal and it is set to help a widow through the grief journey. And it's pretty close to being done. So I'm really excited for that to come out. It will be 10 chapters with prompts of quotes to help get a widow to write through her journey. Because writing, I think we find writing helps people get it out of your head and get it onto the page so that you can let it move through your heart in another way. So that's definitely one. And then I would like to do one more business oriented. You know, we work a lot with widows. So I want to write a book that gets people prepared if the curveball hits their life. Have you been active in your financial life so that you're coming from it from a place of knowledge and rather than fear and ignorance? And I just want women, you know, too many curveballs hit people's lives. Be prepared. And so that's another one that I started a few years ago and I need to dust off and finish.
We just have a couple of minutes left here. Anything that I haven't asked you in regards to this book, Life Lessons in Success, and do you want to give out information on how folks can purchase this book?
Sure. No, I think the book, yeah, it's just a delightful way to get small chunks of inspiration to help on your own life journey. So the book can be found on Amazon.com. It also can be found on our website, whcornerstone.com, and it is on our blog page, Life Lessons and Success, as well as Bill's book, which is very different than this title, Inheriting Your Spouse's IRA, can be found there too. So I would say, I think reading is one of the greatest things we can do to open our minds. Reading and travel, great way to just expose ourselves to new ideas, new cultures, and I encourage people to do more of it. Just keep learning. If you're not learning and growing, you're dying. And I do believe that. And you can be at any age and still be learning. I had a friend, George, who passed away a few years ago, but at 94, he was writing his memoirs. Like, he wanted that out in the world. And that's awesome. He was trying to self-publish it on Amazon and trying to learn how to do that, which was not easy for a 94-year-old.
Well, Paula, we want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Kevin. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
We've been speaking with Paula Harris, who is here to talk about her involvement in a new book called Life Lessons in Success. Make sure you get out and check out that book. That'll do it for tonight's program. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have a great night.